Let's Face the Issues is a daily broadcast ministry of First Conservative Baptist Church with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood. Dr. Youngblood is also the founder, president of Conservative Theological University. Let's Face the Issues broadcast deals with real issues facing our culture today from a biblical perspective. God created three institutions, the home, government, and the church. Therefore, any issue that is harmful or has a negative impact on either of these institutions will be carefully dealt with and confronted from a biblical worldview. Too often, good people are afraid to confront serious issues that are attacking the church, the home, and Christians. We must stand against the enemies of the family and the church. Tune in each day for another broadcast of Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood. Here is Dr. Youngblood with Let's Face the Issues.
Welcome aboard. Thank you so much, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us today on Let's Face the Issues. This is Dr. Youngblood. We're looking for a delightful journey as we look at some issues today, especially the issue that we're going to be talking about, the November the 6th election. I believe the 6th of November will be the definitive, determinative direction for the destiny of America. I don't know if I can state it any more profoundly than that, but that is what we're facing in this election cycle. But ladies and gentlemen, before we get into the monologue this morning, let me remind you, as we face issues, we do so based on the authority of Scripture. The Scripture says, as Jesus speaking to his disciples, "If you continue in my word, then you're my disciples indeed, and you shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." And then in John 17:17, Jesus makes a profound statement that ought to be understood and recognized and embraced by every Christian that's listening today. Jesus said in John 17:17, "Thy word is truth." So we think on the subject, "Thy word is truth." The Bible does not just contain truth. It's not just a source book for truth. It is truth in totality. And ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about governmental issues. We're talking about political issues. We're talking about home and the family issues and the church issues. We're talking about what would be called theological and doctrinal issues as we face the issues. And all of them are inculcated in the Word of God, because God created the home, he created the government, and then he created the church, and in that order. So anything we speak on in those realms are found in the written, revealed, inspired, infallible, inerrant Word of God. It's called the Bible. And ladies and gentlemen, let me remind you that according to the Scripture, God created government. And when he created government, the first thing we find, by the way, in Genesis 9 is about the capital punishment that God created in the governmental system. But in Romans, the 13th chapter, it outlines very, very clearly that the purpose for government, and it's viewed, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, in the biblical text, that government is a ministry, the governmental leaders are ministers of God, to carry out the power that only God can give to them. And therefore, the purpose of government is to protect the good and to prosecute the evil that's in society. That's very succinctly stated, but you'll find that in Romans, the 13th chapter, the first 7 verses in particular. But ladies and gentlemen, first of all, let me once again voice my appreciation and thanksgiving for President Trump and his stand for religious liberties in America. I don't know of any other president in my lifetime that's taken such a visible, valiant stand for our liberties, and especially religious liberties. As a result of our religious liberties being protected by our president, and there's others, of course, in the cabinet and others in our House and the Senate that take the same position, that hold his hands up. But as a result of that, Pastor Brunson was released. And there was not a plane load of cash shipped over to Turkey for his release, but it's because of our president's stand on religious liberty that Pastor Brunson is back in America today. And I don't know if you saw the video clip or not on television, where Pastor Brunson knelt at the knees of our president and thanked God for him and prayed for him that God would give him wisdom to continue to carry out what God has for the agenda of America to be carried out under the leadership of President Donald J. Trump. But ladies and gentlemen, we have just 18 days to go before the most pivotal election in my lifetime. That's on November the 6th. And ladies and gentlemen, on a national level, we have 435 U.S. House of Representatives up for re-election, and about, I think it's 30 Senate seats that's up for re-election. But we also have multitudes of House and Senate seats and the governorship for the state of Florida in our wonderful state in the state of Florida. Perhaps the most vital and most pivotal, the most crucial of these elections in our state, in the state of Florida, is the election for the governorship, the election for the governor, the next governor of the state of Florida. And ladies and gentlemen, we need to understand that we as Christians have the responsibility to be salt and light. And that simply means we take a stand, a verbal, visible, actual stand in the societal needs and in the agenda for our society and for our nation today. It's no longer an opportunity for Christians to sit back in silence, hide in the closet, bury the head in the sand as an ostrich and pretend that it's all going to go away. As a result of about 51% of evangelicals not voting in 2012, we had Barack Hussein Obama as a result of that. And if you want to have Obama type, or if you want to have those as Andrew Gillum that's running for a Florida governor, which is being touted by Bernie Sanders and others as being Obama 2.0, if that's what you want, then you're looking for a socialist government in the state of Florida. But ladies and gentlemen, we have an option. Ron DeSantis is running for the governorship of the state of Florida. Ron is a conservative. He is for border walls. He is a Trump supporter. He stands for our Second Amendment right. He's against abortion. He will keep our Stand Your Ground law and the Castle Doctrine in the state of Florida. He is against higher taxes. He stands for our Constitution and the rule of law. I can't put it any more succinctly than that. And we need to understand, ladies and gentlemen, that we have an option between Ron DeSantis, which is a Christian conservative that stands for our Constitution. He stands for the constitutional republic that we are in and under. He is a constitutionalist in the letter of the Constitution. He doesn't view it as a vacillating, growing, evolving document. He believes that we should take a stand on what the words say in our Constitution and the rule of law. But then there's Andrew Gillum, the one that's the failed mayor of Tallahassee. And Gillum wants, and let me just give you a little brief rundown, and then we're going to introduce our guest today. But I want to give you a brief thumbnail sketch. If you vote for Andrew Gillum, what we get for the state of Florida. Andrew Gillum is a proud socialist, an in-your-face socialist. He wants higher taxes. In fact, he's already said he would increase taxes by about $1 billion. That's about 40% for the state of Florida. Andrew Gillum is for Florida state income tax. Andrew Gillum is against the border security. Andrew Gillum is for free education for all. He is for free health care for all, including illegal aliens. He wants to cancel ICE. He is for special rights for the LGBTQ and the transgender and the sodomite agenda for society and for the state of Florida. He is for legalized pot for the state of Florida. Gillum opposes our Second Amendment rights. In fact, said he would do all that he could to cancel the Second Amendment rights by way of the Castle Doctrine, the Stand Your Ground law that's in effect for the state of Florida. May I remind us, ladies and gentlemen, Andrew Gillum is already under investigation by the FBI for corruption as mayor of Tallahassee. Gillum says he wants to cancel the Stand Your Ground law. Gillum wants Florida to become a sanctuary state. Gillum is supported by George Soros and the Bernie Sanders Socialist Political Action Committee. Now, I don't know if I could set it any more succinctly and go through those steps any more clearly, but it's our responsibility, ladies and gentlemen, to vote and to vote that which is constitutional, that which is conservative, and that which is Christian for the state of Florida. Ladies and gentlemen, if Gillum goes into office, he will destroy our Bill of Rights. He will destroy our religious liberties and freedom of speech. Our state security will be at risk. He will destroy the rule of law. Now, I don't know how anyone else could put it any more succinctly, but I want to urge you to recognize that November the 6th will determine the destiny of America and the destiny of the state of Florida. Ladies and gentlemen, our guest today, and I'm delighted to introduce him to our listening audience, our guest today is Cord Byrd. He is the representative for District 11 for the Florida House. Congressman, thank you for joining us today. Looking forward to what you have to say to our audience.
Well, thank you, Dr. Youngblood, and it's good to be back with you and your listening audience. And I got to tell you, I'm fired up after that opening. I don't know how you couldn't be. I mean, you hit the nail on the head, so that was perfect.
Well, tell me what you think of that monologue and how you would present that if you're presenting that to someone. Is it fair for the state of Florida to be under the repression of a socialist leader and to have our liberties denigrated and or destroyed as a result of that? I don't know how I can put it any more clearly. Perhaps you can add words to that I have not thought of in relationship to the challenge to our listeners about the governor's election. Then we're going to talk about some other things in relationship to your reelection and what you're going to do and why we need to reelect you in the House of Representatives for the state of Florida. But talk to our audience a moment about the seriousness of the election for the House and the Senate nationally and for the leadership locally for the state of Florida and in particular for the governorship.
Yes, sir. Well, I can tell you that I've known Congressman DeSantis for a decade. I consider him a friend. He is the right man to lead Florida going forward. He will continue the good policies of Governor Scott. And the choice couldn't be more clear. I mean, Andrew Gillum, is a socialist. I mean, he claims that. He thinks that, government can do everything for you. And as Ronald Reagan said, a government big enough to give you everything you have is a government big enough to take everything you have. So the choice could not be more clear for people of faith and for conservatives that value the rule of law, the presumption of innocence, and all those things that we hold dear, religious freedom, our Second Amendment rights. I mean, all of those are on the table if Florida goes in the wrong direction. And as important is if we want to reelect Donald Trump in 2020, the governorship holds a lot of power and can sway a lot of resources in a presidential race. That's why Florida is so important to the left, and it's why Soros and Steyer and all this outside money is coming in behind Gillum, because they know that if they can get Florida, and you combine Florida with Texas or California and New York, it's over. So this is not only important for our state, it's important for the nation.
Absolutely. And by the way, I'm sure you're familiar with and speak to the issue that the next governor will appoint three Florida Supreme Court justices.
Well, and that's vital. And that's what I tell people all the time, that maybe you're not fans of President Trump. I'm like, if he does nothing else, he has put two constitutionalists on the U.S. Supreme Court, and you're right, the next governor's going to pick three, and it's already, if Andrew Gillum gets to pick the next three, then we will have a 4-3 liberal majority on the Florida Supreme Court, so it would stop any of the good things that we can do in the legislature, which is another vital reason why it's so important to elect Ron DeSantis.
Absolutely. Well, Congressman, if you would speak to the issue for a moment about your passion and what you're wanting to see accomplished back in the House in 2019 in the legislative session, what you want to see done for the state of Florida. What are some of the major deficits that you feel need to be addressed and that you want to go forward with?
Yes, sir. Well, I ran as a constitutionalist. That's why I always enjoy coming on your show, because you understand that a house is built on a strong foundation, and whether that's a church or whether it's a government, it has to be based on constitutional rule. And so that's the message that I bring. It's what I on every issue, on every bill, I always, what does the Constitution say about this? Does it protect an individual liberty? Does it put government in its proper place? So I will continue being that voice in Tallahassee, but on more specific issues, school safety and security. I mean, after the tragedy in Parkland, we have to make sure that our most precious resource, our children, are safe and secure. And it's a matter of priorities. It's putting our funding and putting it in the right place, and our children are, like I said, are our most valuable resource. So school safety and security and funding is at top of my agenda. Water policy is a huge issue. As our state continues to grow, we're a peninsula, we're surrounded by water, and as we grow, there's more pressure on those resources, and I want to make sure that Floridians continue to be able to enjoy them. They're a God-given natural resource. They're shared by all, and I'm committed to protecting those resources as well.
Wonderful. You touched on that with school security, and I am for, as you and I have talked before on a number of occasions, I'm for hardening the target, if you will, that is the schools, by way of the entry, perhaps limiting the entry points, perhaps having bulletproof glass, perhaps having some type of police protection on each campus, and I think we're doing that in Duval County now. And they just introduced the fact that in the fall there will be metal detectors at all of the school entrance doors. And yet we have some parents, and I was shocked to find it, some parents that were absolutely disturbed by it, distressed by it. In fact, one lady on camera on local news said they didn't talk with the parents about this, and they didn't ask us our opinion of this, and I think it's wrong. Well, personally, I am for having the security tightened, and one of those tightening aspects is the metal detectors at the door. And that's as a result, by the way, and I'm sure you're aware of this, of a bill that John Rutherford sponsored and had co-sponsored in the U.S. House that provided about $70 million across America for assisting the schools, and about $3.9 million went to the state of Florida, and much of that here in Duval County for this very thing. What is your opinion of that, and how should we view the hardening of the school target to prevent, as Parkland schools with the shooter coming in and murdering several people, but with the metal detectors at the doors, do you have any problem with that, or what is your opinion, or what else should we do to protect our kids in the schools?
Yes, sir. Well, I do. I support all of the measures. One of the lessons that we learned from Parkland was that the campus was open. The shooter knew how to get into the school. They didn't have timed locks on the doors. The janitor had to go like 20 minutes before the end of the day bell rang. The janitor went around and had to unlock all the doors. The shooter knew that, so he knew the weak points. And so we need to learn the lesson so we can try to prevent tragedies like this going forward. So I want to take an all-hands-on-deck approach to security. I've spoken to experts, security experts. We've looked at what other countries are doing. You know, Israel doesn't have school shootings. And Israel is in a war zone. They're under attack constantly, but they don't have this because they take the security of their school seriously. But it goes to a deeper problem, which is, and you and I have spoken about this before, which is a societal breakdown. And I see it in Tallahassee. I see it with the people that come and talk to us. We have a deficit of faith and family in our society. And these kids are they're crying out for attention. They're crying out for something greater than themselves. And until we address that, we can have all the security and all the laws that we want. But until we figure out why are these kids broken, until we address that, and I think a big part of that is a lack of faith. I want to talk more about that. And as someone in public office, as a Christian, I'm unafraid to say that that is a problem and we need to address it.
Amen. I'm glad to hear you say that. You know, Matthew Bevin in the state of Kentucky signed into law this past May a bill that allows, in fact, it requires every school to place it as an item that students can take as study in any of the disciplines, but they can study the Bible. Mm-hmm. It is not to be taught, quote, as a religion, but as an historic book to be teaching the Bible. And what you just touched on is exactly true. These kids looking for meaning in life, looking for an answer in life, they're devoid of anything that's called the Ten Commandments. They're devoid of anything that's called biblical truth. Many times they're devoid of anything that is even smacks close to a religious experience, especially something that is a Christian experience, coming out of oftentimes homes that are non-Christian. So speak to that issue. Would you be in favor of, and I know this might put you on the spot, would you be in favor of either sponsoring or co-sponsoring legislation in the next legislative session that would do just as the state of Kentucky, allowing Bible to be taught in the classroom as an elective for any subject?
Well, here's some good news, and I am aware of what Governor Bevin did, and I have my office looking at that, and I am giving it serious consideration. You know, how we can do that and make sure that you know, our students and students of faith are able to read the Bible, study the Bible as part of an elective class. No one's forcing anyone to do anything, but yes, absolutely, that is on my radar and something I'm looking at for the next legislative session.
Wonderful. Well, brother, I want you to know I'll stand with you on that. I'll drive to Tallahassee whatever number of times it takes to help you with that. Be delighted to see that in our state. Looking forward to that. But tell our listeners something else about yourself. Number one, you're a constitutionalist, and that's wonderful. You're unafraid, unashamed to say you're a Christian. I'm thankful for that. But you're also something else. You stand for our Constitution and the Bill of Rights. And in that Bill of Rights, there's a little element there in that Second Amendment called the right to keep and bear arms. Speak to that issue and the importance of that issue in the state of Florida, as would be on a national level. But as a legislator in the state of Florida, how do you stand on the Second Amendment right? What is your area of law that you practice as a lawyer?
Yes, well, I am a firearms law expert. It is the area of law that I practice. There's fewer than five of us in the entire state of Florida. So I have devoted my legal practice to the defense of the Second Amendment and people's ability to keep and bear arms to defend themselves. But I stress, you know, with rights come responsibilities, and I always stress safety and training and making sure when your guns aren't in use that you've got them locked up so the wrong people don't get them or children don't get in touch with them or don't handle them improperly. But it's vital. I mean, you look around the world and you see what's happening, whether it's Saudi Arabia or Russia or China. You know, if you study those countries, they have wonderful constitutions. They have actually many more rights than we have in the United States, not God-given rights, but government-given rights. But the one right they don't have is the ability of the people to defend themselves and to enforce those other rights. And we still have that. It's biblically based. I mean, you have your wonderful book, The Doctrine of Self-Defense, that I have right here on my desk. I'm looking at it as we speak.
That's great.
That goes through and talks about why it is so important for people to have the ability to defend themselves. And the Second Amendment is the amendment that protects and defends all of the others. And I'm passionate about that. I believe in it. It is something else that I stress and emphasize in the legislature and to my colleagues.
Absolutely. One of the things, and you would agree with this, and you might want to elaborate on it further, we're on the heels of the discussion of the Second Amendment right that we have. By the way, as you stated, is very clearly, succinctly stated in my book, The Doctrine of Self-Defense. The right to keep and bear arms is given to us by God. It is codified in our Constitution. It is confirmed by our courts and is to be carried out by we, the people. One of the little questions I've always had, and may I be free enough to ask this even on the air, and you talk about, and I'm in agreement with it, the guns need to be, we need to know how to use them, we need to protect them and keep them away from those that would not be, that would be harmful and dangerous. But I've always wondered how this works. If your gun is under lock and key, a burglar's breaking in your house, and you stand your ground laws, and the Castle Doctrine jumps into effect, and you say, wait, Mr. Burglar, I've got to wait until I open my safe, I've got to go find the cartridges because they're in another room, the ammo's down the hall, wait, just give me 5 minutes, and then I'll respond to your entry into my home illegally. How do we justify that, and how do we juxtapate that in the real world in which we're living?
Sure. Well, I mean, a firearm that's unloaded is nothing more than a rock. We have to have the ability to have it ready. I mean, inherent in the doctrine of self-defense is the ability to defend yourself immediately. And what I was stressing, or the point I was trying to make, is that with all rights come responsibilities.
Yes.
But no, absolutely. Any law that restricts your ability or says you have to have it locked in a safe, and I know there are states that say you have to keep the gun in one place and the ammunition in another. Then it's an unconstitutional infringement on the right. You had the ability to defend yourself has to be an immediate ability.
Congressman, let me ask you a question. I'm in agreement with that, by the way, yes. Let me ask you a question. You know, based on all of the news media, we have a Soros-funded, they've not said this, I am, a Soros-funded group, about 4,000, about to storm the borders on the southern border of the United States. How do you think our government, how do you think President Trump, what should he do in response to this? We know what's happening. We know the approach. We know the attempt to overthrow our immigration system and to overthrow and out-rule the rule of law. How should we, the people, view? I understand that over the left, the bleeding heart liberals say that we're separating mothers and children, et cetera, et cetera. All of that is for show candy for the political agenda for the midterm race that we're in, politically speaking. But what should be done, and how should our listeners view the approach? President Trump said on the morning news that he was going to be willing to send in military to protect our borders, to confront this 4,000 plus that's about to rush the borders. What should be our stand on that? How should we view this? Do we have the right as a nation to turn back anybody and say no? Or do we have an obligation to open the borders, open the doors, and say anybody that wants to, come on into America? Address that for our listeners. I want our listeners to understand your constitutional, conservative, Christian viewpoint on lawmaking and what you're doing for us in Tallahassee. And by the way, I've not said this, but I want to say it publicly. I'm thankful for you. I'm thankful for your stand. I'm thankful for your constitutional stand. I'm thankful for your Christian stand. I'm thankful that you're conservative. And it's my prayer that every listener Well, go to the polls and vote. And if Cord Byrd is on your ballot in District 11, vote Cord Byrd. Put him back in the House, in the House of Representatives in the state of Florida. But address that about our this rush on our border and what the president's going to have to do and what he needs to do.
Well, thank you, Dr. Youngblood, and I'm humbled by your kind words and for your past and continued support. But on the issue of immigration, I can tell your listeners that in Tallahassee, last year we had a bill that would have prohibited sanctuary cities in Florida. I was a co-sponsor of that bill. I argued and debated it on the floor. I debated it in committee because we are not a sovereign nation if you do not control your borders. This is not about hating anyone, because I can tell you that I have helped legal immigrants study to become American citizens that want to be part of this country, that love this country and want to be Americans. But that is not what's happening. This is an attempt to try to change, as President Obama said, to fundamentally transform America. We have every right to defend our borders, and it's not against any individual people or group of people. It is about protecting the citizens. Immigration is for the benefit of the citizens of a nation. It is not for the immigrant. So our citizenship means nothing if someone else can come into this country and give every benefit that you and I and your listeners have right out of the gate. So I read the comments from President Trump this morning. I agree with him. We should cut off the funding to these countries that won't stop this. We should, if it takes using the military or using our law enforcement to defend our borders, then we absolutely we must do that, because I want to put our citizens first. That's who I want to put first.
Absolutely. I'm thankful to hear that, and I'm prayerful that our listeners, the ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Let's Face the Issues. This is Dr. Youngblood. We're talking with Cord Byrd, House of Representatives member of District 11 for the state of Florida. Congressman, let me ask you another question. There are two or three things, and we don't get into the 13 amendments on the ballot. And by the way, just for our listeners, I have said vote no on all 13 of them. Now, others might disagree, and that's fine. But one of the things that I find so disconcerting is that since 1984, five different times, the gambling industry in the state of Florida tried to overturn anything that would prevent them from having open casino gambling in the state of Florida. And one of the amendments speak to that issue, and it's talking about we the people ought to have the right to vote and say yes. And if I did not know, and if I had not studied the background and the history, I would think that, oh, they're wanting my rights to be protected. Congressman, what is your position on that? Because I believe we still have a treaty with the Seminole Indian Reservation and with one other reservation that only on those reservations can there be casino gambling. And I believe this is an attempt to circumvent you as our representatives and the Senate, to circumvent the legislative process, to put it on the ballot. And if it is an amendment passed for the Constitution, then it makes it ironclad. The next thing then would be the enabling legislation to enforce that. And the next thing you find would be the ballot initiative, perhaps by referendum, that would force the issue that Florida would become an open gambling state. Address that issue. Tell us where you are. What do you feel? How should we respond to this?
Well, I'm so glad you brought this up, and it's one of the reasons I love talking about to you, because you understand the Constitution, and not just the liberty side, but the structure of government side. We do not rule by plebiscite. We do not rule by direct democracy. The founders were very intent on having a representative government. And what I see happening with a lot of these amendments, and specifically the one you're talking about, is they want to take it out of the hands of the elected representatives and put it into the hands of the people, because they believe that it's more easily manipulated through slick advertising than it is going through your elected representatives. And that's not to say that the representatives can't be influenced by outside forces, but if you believe in the structure of our government as given to us by our founding fathers, then I think you need to oppose these amendments that seek to legislate through plebiscite and not through the representatives of the people.
Absolutely. I am appalled by that, and perhaps you're familiar with this, but since 1970, the Florida Constitution has been amended 120 times.
Mm-hmm.
Our U.S. Constitution since 1791 has been amended only 27 times. I find it a little antithetical to a constitutional governance when there's always the attempt to amend the Constitution rather than, as you said, going through the legislative process. We've elected our political leaders, and it's through that process that we have a representative government, not a mob-ruled democracy. But we've got about a minute and a half left, Congressman. Speak to our listeners. Invite them to assist you. How can they assist? How can we assist you in your reelection? And what can our listeners do to help in that fashion? Tell us how. Tell them how they can reach you, what they can do. What are your needs in the run for reelection?
Yes, sir. Well, first and foremost, and I'm asking for everybody's vote. If you live in District 11, which encompasses all of Nassau County, the north side of Jacksonville, up Heckscher Drive, and then the three Jacksonville beaches. So first thing, I ask for your vote and your prayers. Vote for Ron DeSantis, vote for Rick Scott, vote for the other Republicans on your ballot, because that helps me do my job when I have fellow like-minded conservatives to work with. And then lastly, they can go to my website. It's cordbird.com, my Facebook page. I have a Twitter. Anything they can do to help out, which is spread the word to their fellow parishioners, to their neighbors, to their friends at school, and always financial support is helpful because it helps me spread our message that that we share. So everyone can do that through the website. It's cordbird.com, and I once again thank you for the opportunity to speak to your listeners and to spread the word about the faith in the Constitution.
Wonderful. Well, it's been a delight and a blessing to have you on the air with us today. We're praying for your success in the reelection process and pray for the election in general. Ladies and gentlemen, vote November the 6th. Vote Christian, constitutional, conservative. Thank you so much for joining us today. Looking forward to meeting you on the air even tomorrow as once again we face the issues.
You have been listening to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood, pastor of First Conservative Baptist Church and president of Conservative Theological University, 12021 Old St. Augustine Road, Jacksonville, Florida, located just 1 mile south of I-295. You are invited to worship with them 9:30 a.m. Sunday for Bible study, 10:45 a.m. Sunday morning worship service, 7 p.m. Sunday evening worship service, or 7 p.m. Wednesday fellowship meal Bible study. Prayer, Bible Q&A, and updates on issues facing our city, state, and country. Tune in again for another Let's Face the Issues broadcast. Also tune in the same station Saturday mornings at 9 for expository Bible preaching by Dr. Youngblood. Remember, a rebroadcast of this program can be heard every evening, 9 p.m. on AM 1600 and 100.3 FM. Tune in and invite others to listen.